Would you please turn to Matthew 13? Let's just turn to Matthew 13, start off. It's a good thing to start off by being encouraged. Remember we said you got to give everybody a compliment? Well, let's talk about this compliment. This is a remarkable piece of information and a remarkable compliment that God, truthfully, obviously, he doesn't lie, cannot lie, says. It's Matthew 13, and in verse 16. Now, you kind of want to guess here who he's talking to, okay? Obviously, here he's speaking, and it's being recorded who he said it to was the disciples, the imitators of Jesus Christ. But clearly, it's been recorded for all history for his people. Matthew 13, verse 16. Matthew 13, 16. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Now, why would God hold information back and then give it to the rest of his church later? Consider this. Without turning there, it's in Matthew 8. You are the light of the world. You are. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. You are the light of the world. Christ was the light of the world when he was here. You are the light of the world now. That's in Matthew 5. And then lastly this, God says to you and I, your thoughts are not my thoughts, and your ways not my ways, says the Eternal. And yet you know all of these things, that prophets and righteous men have desired to look into and couldn't see and couldn't hear, and your thoughts and your ways are not his ways. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than yours, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Is that an amazing concept? That he has seen to it that in fact, we're being told we can't think like him. We don't have the ability to think like him. We can't live like him. Maybe a short way of putting it is, everybody, you're not God. I'm not God. You're not God. God is God. And when I decide to take the information that God has given me and fit it to my circumstance, I have corrupted what he's doing. I wonder what we're going to talk about today. Mankind simply isn't God, doesn't live or think as God is, but God has made the things they sought to know in the past available to you. We should ask ourselves, what do we do with God's knowledge and understanding? What are we supposed to do about it? We have this miraculous knowledge and understanding from God. And here's a misunderstanding. Here's something that's happened wrong in the church. If you have knowledge about God, that's miraculous, knowing what God's doing, knowing about that he is different and the way his religion works is different from the world, and you have that knowledge, that's miraculous. And then you have understanding of God's way. You know why he's doing it. You know what his plans are. That's miraculous. Humans don't have that. That's not really conversion. I have knowledge and I have understanding, and it's miraculous and it's not conversion. We'll show you that. So let's pile up lots of study, get more and more information, and we will be closer to conversion. Nope. Pharisees did it. Think of the people in Matthew 7 that say, didn't we preach in your name? Didn't we cast out demons in your name? Didn't we preach the truth? And he says, get away from me, I never knew you. Why would that be? They knew all about him. They knew what he was doing. They knew what they were supposed to do. They did it, and he never knew them. Something is missing. What is it? Is there some tool God gives us? Is there something in our relationship, our personal relationship with our Father by Jesus Christ, that tells us when we're wrong about our relationship with him and, in fact, what to do about it? You bet there is. Now, let's put it this way. Today, this isn't milk. This is meat. This is for those who are ready to hear it. We are told by God to get his wisdom. How? And if we were to have his wisdom, how could we be sure of it and not think, well, maybe this is my vain imagining that I have his wisdom. I'm wise, see. By the way, lest we go off on a tangent here, anybody that comes and tells you that they are wise, don't listen to that. So now I'm cleared up here. Okay? So don't listen to people telling you they're wise. It's God who's wise. He gives us wisdom. We'll see that too. Since we are told God gives wisdom, and we probably don't have it then if he has to give it to us, let's study God's word today to look for the wisdom of God. There's your title, The Wisdom of God. Just 3 points, probably be done in 10 minutes. Wisdom is a big, big study, but we'll try to get it quickly done. Here's a good place to start. We can start with basically, biblically defining what wisdom of God actually is. Our first point, wisdom is used by God to create. Wisdom is used by God to create, and it's always good. Obviously, since whatever God does is good, it's good. Without turning there, let me just tell you, don't tell you where it is until I tell you what it says. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and in earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. This is talking about Jesus Christ being the creator. By the way, that's in Colossians 1:16. All things in Colossians 1:16 were created by him, for him, and through him, right? Now let's turn to Ephesians 2, though. Let's see this. In Ephesians, the second chapter, we're defining, you have to kind of tread lightly here, to define what wisdom is. Because I know what wisdom is. It's experience. It's education. It's being converted a long time. Well, let's find out. Ephesians 2 and verse 10. Ephesians 2 and verse 10. For we are his workmanship. Ephesians 2:10. We are his workmanship. Created. Did you know you were created? It says here, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. That's not a funny phrase, isn't it? He prepared beforehand. Prepared what? Beforehand. God created all things through Jesus Christ, for Jesus Christ. And the creation of God is what? Good. Isn't it? He said so. We are created for good works. So we are created to be of God. And that's good. How does that work? Well, let's go to Proverbs 8. Proverbs, the 8th chapter. I think it's an understatement to say that Proverbs gives us profound information. And you know, we all know, that Proverbs is about wisdom. So is Job, so is Psalms, so is Ecclesiastes, so is Song of Solomon. It's called wisdom literature. Well, what is wisdom? Well, we're treading lightly here. But part of understanding what wisdom actually is to know this. We're created for good works. That's created in Jesus Christ for good works. When we see what's happening here in Proverbs 8, remember that what we're looking at is something called woman wisdom. This is as if a woman is speaking to you. It's actually Solomon talking to his son, but still, he's using the voice of a woman. And theologians, commentaries, call her woman wisdom. Now, when you know that, then you understand what we're about to see, because wisdom is referred to as a being. All right. Proverbs 8:22. Speaking about wisdom now. Proverbs 8:22. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I have been established. Some translations say brought forth, some say born. Okay, but the point is, I have been established from everlasting. From the beginning, before there was ever an earth. Wow. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. This is speaking of wisdom now. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. Now, lest our minds wander, this is not referring to Christ, because Christ has no beginning and no end. This is referring to wisdom. This is a creative tool of God. Wisdom was used, you'll see, to create all things. Oh, then it's not understanding, and it's not information. It's not knowledge. There's something else going on here. Okay, verse 26. While as yet he had not made the earth or the fields, verse 26, or the primeval dust of the earth, of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. And it goes on. This is a father speaking to his son about the use of wisdom as a tool of creation. And it creates good. Now, when God creates, he creates from nothing. We manipulate the creation. I'm a creator. I made this pot. I made this painting. I made a child. No. We manipulated the creation that God gave. But God made the creation from nothing. And when he's talking about creating good, it came from nothing. And he used wisdom. Oh, well, he was very smart. He was very wise. That's how he made. No, well, that's not the way the language works here. Obviously, God is smarter than we are. He's very wise, but he's actually talking about wisdom as if it's a thing or person, isn't he? Isn't that what we see here? By the way, that's not just poetry. God allows us to use his wisdom. He doesn't force us, but he allows us because we are created for good works. That's our calling. Now, we don't have to go through the story and look at it and see where it is, except this, that Solomon was given wisdom. More than any other human before Christ, he was given wisdom. And the reason is because God said to him, "What would you like? Anything you want, you can have." And he said, "I would like wisdom to be able to lead this great people and to rule over this people of yours." And God said to him, "Because this was in your heart, and you have not asked riches or wealth or honor of life, the life of your enemies, nor have you asked long life, but have asked wisdom and knowledge for yourself, I will grant you everything else as well and wisdom." Now, without getting into a two-hour review of what Solomon went through, let's put it this way. Until you understand, and I understand, what the book of Ecclesiastes written by Solomon is about, it looks like the ravings of a person who is extremely depressed. And what he's really saying is life is worthless. Life is worthless. I don't care how rich you are, powerful you are, how much you accomplish, how much you know, how much you serve, it's worthless because we all go to the same place. We all go down to the dust. How wise is that? Well, the book has an ending. Let's turn to it, Ecclesiastes 12. Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter. After he had all this wisdom, and he had done everything he could imagine, anything his heart desired, he did it. And he observed that mankind just didn't know what they were doing. That was his observation as the wisest human being who ever lived, given the wisdom of God to learn about life. He came to the conclusion that life is vanity. What that means is it's just gone. There's nothing really here. So what we do is we hang on to it, he said, and we think we're like God because we're alive and we can think and we can plan and we can create, and none of it is true. It's all vanity. So what is the end of that then, this wisest man has to say? Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. Ecclesiastes 12, 13. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it's good or whether it's evil. Now, that sounds pretty short and pretty easy and kind of religious, and, we know what that means. Oh, really? Well, it's so profound, we can go right over it like a freight train. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. That means the reason for being. Fear God. What's that mean? I'm terrified of God. Well, we ought to study that. What does fear God mean? And keep his commandments. Yes, but I have to make a place in society. Yes, but I have to be accepted. Yes, but people have to understand how great I am. I need to be important. I am a servant. Hey, fear God and keep his commandments. All the rest of it is vanity. And that is what we've learned from the wisest man who ever live. Now let's talk about all that for a minute, because what he's done is he's told us, you guys, you take yourselves too seriously. The reality of what wisdom actually is starts here, what he said here. This is how it starts. To know that we're temporal, that we're created, that we are returning to dust, that 100 years from now, if men are still on the earth the way they are now, we will not be remembered. To know that God is life, He's the life giver. And the precious moments of life we have in our short life span are all we get. And they're here to teach us. We're here to learn wisdom, to live like God. He is the source of all good and all truth. That is the beginning of knowing how to work with wisdom. What he does is eternal. Everything God does is eternal. He makes a decision, it's an eternal decision. He makes a move, it's an eternal move. He creates, it's an eternal creation. You say, well, he made a temporal creation here. Yeah, it's going to evolve, excuse that word, into eternity. Let us make man in our image. What do you suppose that means? So God is in the business, if you will, of creating good, building, bringing good, and sharing it. Creating it and sharing it. And how do you share good? Well, here's an analogy. Wisdom is like streams or rivers in the desert, or rain in the desert, where everything is dormant. All of the creation in the desert is dormant. It hasn't got any life-giving water. And then the water comes in the stream, or it comes in the rain. And this creation that God made, that knows how to use the water, comes to life. It's good. And that's like wisdom. When God gives us wisdom, it is life to us. Proverbs 9. Let's go back to Proverbs. We'll be in Proverbs a little bit once in a while. Proverbs 9. Woman wisdom is going to make her case here. She's going to tell us, don't forget. Don't leave me. Reuse me. Come and get me. Have a relationship with me. All right? She's making her case. Proverbs 9. Just, we could read the whole thing, but Proverbs 9, verse 6. Proverbs 9, 6. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding. Forsake foolishness. Okay, well, now this is a term, fools, foolishness, foolhardy. This is a term we're going to see again today. Foolishness is not wise. Not wise. Forsake that. This isn't necessarily sin, but it can be. And the reality is there's another thing that God refers to, and that's being simple. You simple people. Foolishness and simple. But neither one are wise. Forsake foolishness. Why? And live. That's why. Well, yeah, you know, I can have God's wisdom and I might live another couple of years or another 10 years. No, that's not what that means. That means eternal life. Forsake foolishness. Stop that. What the world is, being part of it, trying to be impressed in it and by it and for it. Instead, reject it. Come out of her, my children, and be of me. Be, yeah, I'm holy, you be holy. That's what he says that for. There's all kinds of information about I'm holy, you be holy, all through the Bible. Don't be like that. Don't be like those people. And by the way, understanding here, when you see this, you say, well, wisdom and understanding are the same thing. Definitely not. Absolutely not. Understanding is basically an accurate grasp of God's truth. Understanding is actually an accurate grasp of God's truth. And frankly, it also can be used to show that when God creates things using understanding as well as wisdom, that he's doing it very well. He understands. He's like a craftsman. He's doing it very well. That's what it basically comes across like in Hebrew. Okay, so our first point was wisdom is used to to create. God uses wisdom to create. And it's always good. Now, we've kind of defined it here. But the second point is, how do we recognize God's wisdom in life today? We have to be able to see it. Do we know it when we see it? Well, people look wise. Is it possible to corrupt wisdom? I mean, wisdom is true from God. Could it be corrupted? Well, think about this. Eve looked at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and she said, among other things, it looks like I need that, I want that, because it looks good, like the fruit looks like something to make one wise. Remember, Eve was deceived. And it's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It looked like it would make you wise. Let's do that. So it's possible to be fooled about what wisdom is. So let's figure out how that happens. Funny place to go, but let's try Ezekiel. Ezekiel 28. Oh, I know what this is. Yeah. Well, you've been there before. Ezekiel 28. Won't hurt to look at it, because we tend to emphasize other things in Ezekiel 28, speaking of Satan and Lucifer. And actually, in the specific verse, we emphasize other things, but let's look at what it actually says about wisdom. Ezekiel 28, speaking of this covering cherub, one of the three that we know of, Michael, why can't I think of the other one? Gabriel and Lucifer. And then he did something. Ezekiel 28, verse 17. God speaking to him. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You what? Corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. And I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they might gaze at you. This is obviously yet to come, but consider this a minute. Go back, and that sentence that says, you corrupted your wisdom. A couple of words in there that are important. Where did he get wisdom that wasn't corrupted? Where do you suppose? God. Uncorrupted wisdom only would come from God. And then it's called your wisdom. You corrupted your wisdom. Now, it depends on how you want to translate Hebrew, but it looks like it could be one of two things. Either it became his wisdom because it was corrupted, or we actually possess wisdom God allows us to have from him as long as we don't corrupt it. But this became corrupted wisdom. And this being is God of this world. And he influences you and me with his corrupted wisdom and his corrupted reasoning. Does it all the time. What happens when he does that? Well, let's look. Genesis 6. Genesis 6. What happens? Remember the first time somebody told me that? What? What are you talking about? Genesis 6. God made, remember, without going back there and looking at it, when God finished the recreation, he looked at it and he said what? It is very what? Good. Meaning human beings too. This is a good creation, what I did here. And the way he did it was to use wisdom. Then something happened. Don't forget, Satan corrupted his wisdom. Genesis 6, the word corrupted, remember? Okay, Genesis 6:11. Genesis 6:11, the earth was also, 6:11, the earth was also corrupt. The earth was corrupt. Somebody corrupted it. The earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. Verse 12, so God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt. The earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. this corruption thing is pretty important because it is based in the idea of having corrupted wisdom. Remember, Eve said, "Hey, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, has what looks to be good fruit that will make you wise." And then here we are, see her children corrupting the earth and themselves. So it's possible to have God's wisdom and corrupt it. Have we ever done that? Well, let's go back to Ecclesiastes again, part of the wisdom literature. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes here. Ecclesiastes 7. There are conditions, the biggest condition for when God gives wisdom to someone is that wisdom is given to a person who trusts God, who is in the process of trusting God, not man. Even though that person sins. Think about it a minute. No one is perfect. No one does not sin. Double negative. No one does not sin. And yet God gives his wisdom to people who sin. Okay. Then it's okay to sin and I get wisdom. No. No. Let's go. Ecclesiastes 7:19. Wisdom 7:19. Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city. So I don't care how wise somebody is, if they're ruling a city, wisdom is wiser than that. Verse 20, for there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. That's an interesting sentence there, isn't it? There is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. So it's possible to be just, be doing good, and sin too. Meaning that what's happening is not necessarily corrupting wisdom, but missing the mark, as it says in Hebrew. So in other words, you're not saying, well, I don't have to follow God's law because I have his wisdom. That's not what that's saying. Being completely submissive to God, trusting God, not man. That's what this is saying. Verse 23. All this I have proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, verse 23. But it is far from me, verse 24, as for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find out? So wisdom is something humans don't have. It is something humans can't understand unless God makes it available. Verse 25, I applied my heart to know, to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly. So foolishness can be wicked. Even of foolishness and madness. Then verse 29, Ecclesiastes 7, truly this only I have found, that God made man upright. He made him good. But they have sought out many schemes. We have a way of figuring a way around it so that if you dare come into our society, into our life, and tell us that we already don't know good and evil, that we're not good judges of evil and good, and that we're not godly because we understand evil and good. Don't you dare come in. You know what we'll do? We'll kill you if you come here and tell us that. We'll kill you, God, if you come. We did that. Because God came here and told us we did not know good from evil. We were not godly, and we said, you're not telling us that. And we killed him. We don't want your wisdom. You can take your wisdom. We have our own. Wisdom is this: grasping that God is God, trusting that what he tells to do, we should do that. We should not modify his wisdom for our circumstance. We're not allowed to do that and say it's wisdom. Because what happens if we modify his wisdom for our circumstance? We corrupt it because we're not God. Wisdom is grasping that God is God. We're not God. That he is above all things and all persons, and we are to follow his wisdom. What do you suppose the purpose of wisdom is anyway? Why would we even need it? Let's go back. The Bible tells us, Proverbs 1, you know this anyway. Let's just quick look. Proverbs 1. And by the way, the book of Proverbs is introduced by, you know, the baby steps of saying, here's why we even have the book, and here's why you need to learn wisdom. It's a little baby steps, right? What is the purpose of wisdom? Proverbs 1, let's just go, we won't go through the whole thing, but Proverbs 1, 7. Proverbs 1, verse 7. There it is again. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, this is how you even begin to understand anything. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. If God tells us to do something and we go, yeah, but I have to modify that because I have a different circumstance and you'd understand. No. Verse 8, my son, hear the instruction of your father, verse 8, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be graceful ornaments to your head and chains about your neck. Now, you could say the church is your mother and God is your father. You could do that if you wanted to. But this is talking to a child here. Proverbs 1:10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Don't do that. Don't be part of that. Don't get involved with that. It's not worth it. Just don't do it. Now, go back to verse 1. Now that we see there's this, excuse the expression, action, movement based on wisdom. Don't go this way, go this way. There's wisdom is basically a tool of action, isn't it? Starting to feel that? Okay. Look at Proverbs 1, verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. And by the way, Solomon learned this from David. We haven't got time to prove that, but you can find the very same thing in Psalms. And Solomon said it, by the way. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. You know what we just said? The same thing we started with. You have been given wisdom. You have been given the ability to see what no one else could over the millennium. You have been given wisdom to understand this. And by the way, you know what prudence is? Strange thing. Here, look at how it mixes together. In verse 4, Proverbs 1:4, to give prudence to the simple. Somebody who is simple doesn't have prudence. What is it? The ability to foresee what will happen based on a specific action. That's what prudence is. The ability to look forward based on the actions you get involved with. Why show that to a young man? Why tell that to a young man? His brain's not developed yet. He cannot foresee how dumb he is any more than we can. So he needs prudence. Possible, funny thing, for God to give prudence to a young man. What an interesting concept. So, okay, this is all good. I'm sold. What do I do? How do I get this? Two things. Let's start here, Proverbs 3. First, wisdom is not of our experience. It isn't of our learning. It isn't of our experience, our values. No matter how much worldly wisdom we have, no matter how much experience, no matter how long we've been in the church, none of that is about wisdom. None of it. Proverbs 3, verse 5. Proverbs 3, 5. This is what it's about. Proverbs 3, 5. Trust in the Lord. Meaning, if he tells us to do something and we don't understand why and it's going to harm us and we are sure he's wrong, do it. Trust in the Lord with all your inward parts, your very being. and lean not to your own understanding. I know how things are. No, we don't. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. And there are stories of all of us. We can go back in our history and remember when we did, in fact, actually trust God. He managed it around us. That even though the world doesn't like it, he managed our lives for us. Just like he managed it for Israel, just like he managed it for David. David got scared a couple times. You can see that. Okay, so that's the first thing, and that wisdom is not of our experience or life values. Now, how do you get it? Wow, this is complicated stuff. How do you get wisdom? James 1. This is profound. This is remarkably difficult, very complicated. God doesn't want the world to understand how to get wisdom, so he hides the information in plain sight. James 1, verse 5. How do I get wisdom? Keep the law. Okay. James 1, verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, which is a miracle of God, and the action that causes creation that is good, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Wow, that's pretty complicated stuff. But let him ask in faith. Oh, in other words, I have to actually trust that when God starts to give me wisdom and tells me stuff I don't like, I have to trust it's him guiding me. With no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways, or simple, to put it in Hebrews' approach. You want wisdom? Ask. That's all there is to it. Just ask, but do it in faith. So the first point is, wisdom is used by God to create, and it's good. And the second thing is, we can recognize God's wisdom in life today as long as we realize we have to trust God and know we can actually corrupt wisdom. And finally, this is the third thing. The third thing, and we already knew this anyway. Watch. How do we measure? The third thing, how do we measure God's true wisdom in life? So the first one is, God's wisdom is used to create. The second thing is, how can we recognize wisdom in life when we see it around us? And then the third thing is, how do we recognize it in us? Hebrews 5. Back to Hebrews 5, please. We're right there in James, so we can go back, not that far back. Hebrews 5. See, God has given us this process, this wisdom tool, this priceless gift of being able to understand his will and to make just, wise, good decisions. Knowledge is important. Understanding is important, but it's only valuable in context of wisdom. We gain wisdom by learning and living by God's will. Trusting God. That's how we gain wisdom. It isn't going to class long enough until I have a lot of wisdom. That doesn't work that way. It's that as we trust God, we actually learn. He knows what he's doing. He's God. I'm not. And that's a wise thing to know, and it allows us to create good. So watch this. Hebrews 5, verse 12. Hebrews 5, start there in verse 12. For by this time, Hebrews 5, 12, you ought to be teachers. You need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. Remember, I said this isn't milk. This is solid food. This is meat today. Verse 13. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. Verse 14. But solid food belongs to those who are of full age. That means scripturally, full age. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both godly good and godly definition of evil. And we're very good at deceiving ourselves. Remember, Jeremiah 17, 9, we'll deceive ourselves. Our heart, our very inside, will deceive us. We're good at it. It's deceitful above all things. So we'll tell ourselves we're wise. And the way to know we're not is to trust God about something we don't want to do, but he says to do it. But this will hurt me, others. God says to do it. Nah, my life circumstance doesn't allow for that. No, that's not wise. God knows what he's doing. He created the universe, and he used wisdom to do that. So is there a list? Is there a place? How do we know wisdom is being developed in us? I don't know. Let's just pray about it. Let's just keep it on faith. No, God makes it extremely clear. There's only one example to follow. 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter 2. There is an example to follow to know you have wisdom, God's wisdom. 1 Peter 2. And verse 21, without going into the context of this, let's just not even do that. But let's just take the verse itself. 1 Peter 2, verse 21, to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, having left us an example that you should follow his steps. So he is our example. Did he ever do anything he didn't want to do that would hurt him? That would hurt the people around him? Did he trust God to deal with that? Did he even express wonder as to why this was happening this way? And still trust God? Not my will, but yours? You bet. And we know that. So what's this example about? Okay, let's go to Hebrews 1. Hebrews, the first chapter. And by the way, when we're looking at this idea of being not God and God being God and us understanding that we're temporal and he's God, that's academic. There is a place where a human being can actually come to the place where they see themselves as worthless, which is what they are. That's what Ecclesiastes is about. He says, life is a vanity. It's worthlessness. Outside of God's guidance, it's worthless. No matter what we think we have, no matter what we think we are, no matter how much we've accomplished, no matter how many people like us on Facebook, we still are worthless. Hebrews 1, verse 3. This is speaking of Jesus Christ, Hebrews 1, verse 3, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Now we go back to the front of that, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person. The words express image come from one Greek word. And that one Greek word, I'll tell you in a second what it is, but it means an engraving or a carving. And it actually is a Greek word that applied to the person who does engraving and carving. And it is an engraved or carved expression, image of any person or thing. Marked likeness, precise reproduction in every respect. It is called, I'll spell it for you, C-H-A-R-A-K-T-E-R. Familiar word, huh? Character. It is the express image of something it's representing. So Christ is the express, exact image of the Father. And we are to be like that. There are other translations. One of them, New Living Translation, says the sun radiates God's own glory and expresses the very character of God. There's all kinds of ways that it is translated, but it still always comes down to the exact look. If you want to know what the Father is like, look at Christ. If we want to know what God is like, all we have to do is follow Christ. See, he's actually given us wisdom. The Father has given it through Christ to us. Mr. Armstrong went around asking the ministry, senior ministry, what do they think character is? And this went on for quite some time, months, where they wrote in what they thought character is. And this is the definition they all arrived at. The definition of character, which is how you measure whether wisdom is in you, the definition of character is, it is that controlled ability. That controlled ability in a separate, independent entity. In a separate, independent entity to come to the right knowledge of the true from the false, the right from the wrong, and by free choice, choose the right and the true, and to use self-discipline to will and actually do the right, no matter whether it hurts you or not. The point is, you get the idea. Choose right, always. Always. That's character. If I'm not doing that, then wisdom is wanting. We are who God is working through to reveal himself and in one way show his wisdom to humankind. We see our calling. You want to see our calling? 1 Corinthians 1. 1 Corinthians 1. You might actually have gotten the idea this is a bigger study than we can do in an hour. There is a little bit more to this. But this is the essence, God willing. This is the essence of it. Or another way to put it is, you'll know wisdom when you see it because God shows it to you, and you will be doing it. It's an action. It's a tool of creation, sharing of good, created by God. We are who God is working through. We are the, what did we say in the beginning? Light of the world. He is who he is working through. We are. And the salt of the earth. We're not to hide this. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. 1 Corinthians 1, 26. Brethren, for you see your calling, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world. Didn't know what they were doing. The foolish ones. Remember, that's where we come from. Not me, I'm not, no, well, okay. Now, that's not wise. God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. There's a reason why God takes the weak ones. Because even them I can convert. Even them I can make into the family of God. Even them I can uphold my promises to Abraham. Oh, that's why. To put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are mighty, and the base things of the world and the things which are despised. God has chosen the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are. All the things and all the people and all of the plans and all of the governments and religions and all of the science and all of the education comes to nothing because it isn't wise, it's corrupted wisdom. But God can take our lives and make us wise. And the reason is to tell the world what he's like. We're going to come down to this, so let's go here. The 90th Psalm. Maybe you'll remember this in the future. the 90th Psalm. Maybe you'll go back over it again and look at this and write notes down and say, you know what, I learned something else. I went over this yesterday and I didn't see this. This is an interesting section of the book of Psalms. First of all, it's the beginning of what's called Book 4, the 90th Psalm. But there are some things in here that are relevant to us because nobody else gets it. 90th Psalm, verse 1. Lord, you've been our dwelling place in all generations. Stop. How many generations have there been? Tens of thousands. I mean, maybe millions, billions of generations. Really? You know how long a generation is? About 30 years. Make it 40. The point will be even more intense. 30 years. We have been as human beings on this earth since Adam and Eve, 6,000 years. Do the math. How many generations is that? 30 years per generation, 6,000 years. How many generations? Thousands, tens of thousands, 200. 200. That's all. There are billions of people because we have a tendency to do stuff during our lifetime to make more people. But only 200 turnovers. Well, you mean in the entire history of mankind there's only been 200 generations? Yeah, approximately, yeah. That's important here. Keep going. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth. Mountains. Picture a mountain in your mind, like Everest. What am I going to do to harm it? To help it? To make it bigger? To make it smaller? Mountains don't need us. They're just there. And they are there in deep time. Time completely beyond our understanding. They're just there. We can't hurt them, help them. They don't need us. And God made them. God has chosen the foolish things of the world. I'm in the wrong place. Okay, so before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, before any of that, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man to destruction and say, return, O children of men. He's allowed us to do this to ourselves. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, and like a watch in the night. You carry them away like a flood. They're like sheep in the morning. They're grass which grows up in the morning. It flourishes and grows up in the evening. It's cut down and withers. Anybody who's been through a death anywhere knows that's what happens to human beings. They're gone. Verse 7. For we have been consumed by your anger. Why would he be mad at us? Humanity has been consumed by his anger because we have corrupted his creation. And by your wrath we are terrified. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance, and for all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. We're nothing. The days of our lives are 70 years, and by reason of strength they're 80 years, and yet our boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, as is your wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Now we could say that what we need God to do is to teach us math so we can figure out how many days there are left in our lives, which there would be anything wrong with that, that would actually be humbling. But to consider the context of this and say that what in fact it's saying in Hebrew is, consider, teach us how to number our days aright or correctly or humbly. In other words, we're not going to live forever. We're not God. That's what we want you to teach us, that we may gain the heart of wisdom. The point of gaining wisdom is to know we're not God and we're not able to be like God. So the three points are this. Wisdom is used by God to create, and that's always good, including the new creature, the creation, we are. He used wisdom to get you here. He has used wisdom to keep you here. Second point, how could we recognize God's wisdom in life today? Trust God. Give yourself over to him. And don't corrupt his wisdom. Let him be in charge. And the third thing, how do we measure God's true wisdom in us? Christ is our standard. Look at Christ. If we're not like him, the wisdom is lacking. Now let's end here. Frankly, I mean here. We're right here. Keep going. Psalm 90, verse 13. Return, O Lord, how long? And have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us early with your mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. If he satisfies us with his wisdom and mercy, we will be glad. We won't be suffering through life. Make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us, which is this life, the years in which we have seen evil, and we have. Let your work appear, this is our calling, in to your servants and your glory to their children. Let it appear to them. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, that mankind looks at his people and knows there is a God. And establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. What he's saying is all of this is to be done in his wisdom, the wisdom of God.